The advice given on this show is for informational purposes only. It is not intended as investment advice. Please consult a financial advisor before undertaking any investment decisions. While the show's producers have tried to provide accurate and timely information and have relied on sources they believe to be reliable, the show may include inadvertent technical or factual inaccuracies. Jack Monteith and Ken Smith do not warrant the accuracy or completeness of the materials provided and expressly disclaim any warranties or merchantability or fitness for a particular purpose.
Good morning and welcome to the Successful Investing Radio Show with me, Jack Monteith, and my business partner, Ken Smith. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Jack.
This is a show that is going to help you build wealth, protect your wealth, and to enjoy the fruits of your success. Ken and I have a combined 40 years of experience in the financial world, and we're partners in the successful wealth management firm of Empirical Wealth Management. We're here to share with you sound investment and financial advice, the same philosophy that Warren Buffett recommends for most individual investors, the passive approach.
That's right, Jack, and I'd like to invite our listeners to visit our website, empiricalwm.com. That's empiricalwm.com to learn more about Empirical Wealth Management. We work with high net worth individuals who have at least $1 million in liquid net assets to work with. And we work on a fee-only basis, and we'd love to talk to you and invite you to call us at 1-800-923-4307. And we also like to invite you to visit our radio website, and that website is successfulinvestingradio.com, and Successful Investing Radio is all one word. We've got a new feature on the site where if you would like to submit a question and have Jack or I read your name and where you're from on the on our show and answer your question, we encourage you to go to the website, click on the Contact Us button, and then within that, there's a Submit a Question for the Show button. And you can do that anonymously or give us your name. We'd love to read that on the show, and we encourage your questions.
Ken, this morning's topic is very timely with this crazy market. Yeah. You know, the over the last 12 months, the S&P's down almost 40%, or actually, it was over 40%, and some of the emerging markets down 50%, and international, you know, just getting crushed, and you know, all kinds of bad news after bad news after right. bad news. So we're going to answer some of these questions that we posed in our recent quarterly letter.
That's right.
And try to address some of these fears and topics. And, you know, what's the prudent investor to do going forward on this?
That's right, Jack. And, our letter that we just wrote is called An Empirical Examination of Market Volatility. And we're going to post it on the radio website and then also on our Empirical website as well. And we'd encourage you to go ahead and click on that, download that paper. But we're gonna address some of these questions because I think it's important at times where the media is bombarding us with, you know, the terms like crisis, meltdown, end of the world type of stuff, to try to bring some calmness and look at things through a longer term perspective.
You know, and you see a 500-point market crash splashed across the front page, you know, and giving an example, on September 29th, the Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped a record 778 points. It was huge news. But let's put this in perspective. How does this compare with previous one-day drops in the market?
That's right. I mean, one of the questions we have in the paper is, you know, has the market, it seems exceptionally volatile right now, and is there any precedent for this type of instability? And certainly there has been. And when we talk about a one-day drop of 778 points, it certainly sounds pretty dramatic, and it's true, the media is right that it was the largest point drop, but as investors, we're not really concerned about points on the Dow Jones. If we were trying to examine if things are more volatile than ever before, what we'd really be concerned about is the percentage points, the percentage loss decline that we experienced. And what you find is that the drop here on September 29th was 17th in rank of worst one-day declines. And the number one decline occurred on October 19th, 1980. 1987, and that was a 22.6% decline, Jack, in one day. And if we equivocated that to the Dow's points and today's points prior to the September 29th drop, we would have had to seen a 2,519-point decline in the Dow Jones to be equivalent to that previous decline.
So the market would have dropped somewhere from 9,500 on the Dow Jones to 7,000?
That's right.
Yeah. Exactly.
There's been if you look at the data on this, there's been a long list of one-day declines of 5% or more. Sometimes those declines have been accompanied with news and crisis. A lot of times there's no reasonable explanation. And so what do you take away as an investor from that? Well, you take away that the markets, at least the stock or global equity markets, are inherently volatile. They've been so, and if we go back to 1926, you have several days that had declines of 5% or more. They've been so for a long period of time, and they're not any more volatile in what we're experiencing now than historically.
Well, Ken, as advisors, we're hearing quite often, and I know most advisors, and even among friends, you hear the comment or the question, you know, should I avoid equities until the conditions improve, you know? So, you know, as if there's a fire alarm that goes off announcing to the financial public that it's okay, it's clear, we can get back into investments now. So how do we address that question or that mindset, should I avoid equities until conditions improve?
Well, I think one thing we can do, Jack, is arm our listeners with the data. You know, what does the empirical evidence say about this? And first piece of data that's in our paper we show is that going back to 1926, that equities are beating treasury bills, or we could call cash. They've beat them 69% of the one-year periods of time. So an investor who had a one-year time horizon, and we would never recommend somebody with a one-year time horizon be in equities, but it's still worth knowing what the statistics are. 69% of the time, equities have beat treasury bills in one-year periods. When you get out to 10 years, you're at 86% of the time. When you get beyond 20 years, it's 100% of the 20-year time frames that you could look at. Going back to 1926, equities have outperformed cash. So that's one thing. You got odds there that you're not going to be around. If you pull your money out and put it into cash, you know, in any one year, you've got almost 70% chance that equities are going to outperform that cash. So what would happen if you were trying to time this? Well, we did our own little study, and we said, well, what if the market declined 15%? And at that point, we threw up our hands and said, look, we're going to switch out of equities, and we're going to put it into cash for one year until things look better. This is a very conservative way of looking at this. And what we found that is going back to 1926, you'd have about 11 periods of time where you had a 15% decline or more in the S&P 500 index. And if you did that strategy, 7 out of 10 times, the subsequent one-year returns on equities were higher, again, than being in cash. The average rate of return after a 15% decline over these 11 periods was about almost 13% in equity. So it was higher than the long-term average of 10% that equities have the S&Ps afforded. The average in cash would have been about 4.5%. So that's another statistic that says, well, geez, that wouldn't have been the greatest long-term strategy. The odds are stacked against me here. The last thing I want to throw out is the study that we put in on what happens if you miss the best days of the market. And going back to 1970, there are about 9,000 or so potential trading days that a person could be invested in the market. And if you simply missed the best 15 trading days, Jack, your return was cut literally in half. So if you put $1 million in the market in 1970 and you just held on to the portfolio, you would have turned that $1 million into $54 million. If you missed 15 of the best trading days, instead of having $54 million, you'd have about $25 million.
You know, those are such powerful facts, and I really encourage our listeners to access our website, whether it's through the Successful Investing Radio Show website or Empirical Wealth Management. take a look at these graphs and these figures. I mean, very, very powerful. Ken, before we get to the next question, I'm going to state what one of my pet peeves or belief is, and I believe most individual investors that are not with advisors are invested way too aggressively. And when we get questions like, you know, should I get into cash and wait for this market? It just tells me, you know, look, they were probably in the wrong investment allocation from the very beginning. And sad to say, there's a lot of advisors out there with their clients way too aggressively invested. So here we go. Okay. Here's the next question. I'm not ready to abandon the market completely, but should I consider a more conservative asset allocation?
Well, Jack, as you know, our process that we do with our clients is we sit down and we look at their situation in a variety of ways. So we really understand before we get them into before we recommend their mix of stocks to bonds, we incorporate the fact that we know we're going to have bear markets. We know, you know, about 30% of the time the market is going to be down or negative, and we know that on extremes, the equity side could be down 20, 30, 40, 50%. And we factor that in when we build a retirement plan or an education plan or a cash flow plan. We know we use a tool that incorporates a sophisticated cash flow analysis tool that incorporates that market volatility and comes up with a probability of success that the client will reach their goal. And that probability is typically about 85% is what we like to use. That their portfolio is going to be successful. Then we look at their risk tolerance, and we've went out and looked at an approach that scientists and psychologists have developed to measure risk tolerance, and then we look at their time frame and their ability to take risk financially. From that, we develop a globally diversified portfolio that has a mix in stocks and bonds that would meet their give them a high probability. Now, just because the market went down, which is part of the plan. We knew the market would go down at some point or 30% of the time, doesn't necessarily mandate that you change asset allocations. And in a lot of cases, as we've shown in these other studies, what you're guaranteeing to do if you reduce your equity exposure is you're guaranteeing to not be in the market when it turns around.
Exactly.
Right? In 2003, the global portfolio, globally diversified portfolio of index funds did about 48% following the decline of the market.
So, well, what was interesting during that period is a preponderance of the analysts were suggesting that the 2003 year would be a very poor year for stocks.
That's right. When the markets turn, the market will go up in advance of it being broadly publicized that we're now out of a recession and instead of being in a crisis, we're heading into, you know, prosperity. The market's pretty good at adjusting to that very quickly.
Well, going to a more conservative asset allocation in a market decline is different than rebalancing.
It is, and I want to say something, Jack, that I'm not suggesting that no one go to a more conservative. If this occurrence, because you just mentioned that a lot of people were too aggressive to begin with.
Correct.
And if this occurrence is now causing you to want to review your total strategy and your plan, hey, let that be an opportunity to do so. And maybe you plan around, hey, as the market recovers, or I dollar cost average into a more conservative allocation, just a wholesale change might not be the best thing at this time.
Well, I agree.
Right.
You know, so another topic as you're speaking, Ken, is, you know, people ask about, well, you know, do I need an advisor? Do I need to go into cash, or do I need this allocation or whatever? But this, during periods like this volatility and this turmoil, is exactly the time you need a good advisor. You need a good advisor. One of the most important jobs a good advisor is going to do is right up front. They're going to do the homework to put you into the proper allocation. They're going to put you into an allocation that's built for good times and bad times and is designed around your risk tolerance and your risk capacity. But then more importantly, when the markets are crashing like this, a good advisor is really going to, you know, so to speak, hold your feet to the fire. You know, remind you what your goals are and remind you what the characteristics of the market and what the characteristics of your asset allocation is.
Yeah, Jack, and I want to comment on that because I think it's a huge mistake that investors make is they like their advisor as long as things are going well.
Isn't that the truth?
And at the time in which we had difficult markets, which is the time that you should be paying the most attention and following your advisor's advice, a lot of people abandon that. And to me, that's the same as saying, we're on a plane together, Jack. As long as things are smooth, we're okay. When bumpy weather comes along or we go through turmoil, me and you charge the front, we throw the pilots out, and having no experience or knowledge, we trusted them, right? As long as things were going smooth. Now we take over the plane, and we want to land the plane. Would that be a successful approach, you know, or would we say, no, that's absolutely ridiculous? Yet that's exactly what a lot of investors do, is they feel like, hey, we're in turbulent weather now. I need to throw the experienced pilot out of the cockpit, right, and I'm going to take over, even though I hired the pilot because I don't know how to fly.
With that analogy, that's the same as now the markets have been bad. I'm getting out of this thing. I'm going to wait for the markets to recover. I'm going to sell the cash. And now the problem is, how do you land this plane? How do you know when to get back in?
Right.
Do you get back in on a day like this when the Dow's up 600 points? Is that the signal that this whole thing's going to turn around?
Right.
Well, maybe it is and maybe it isn't. But the problem is people will get whipsawed in these kinds of market conditions. They'll jump back in. Oops, tomorrow it's down 5%. They get back out. So they're just compounding their losses.
And I think we should warn investors, because every time there's either a downside crisis like this or we get a bubble, what you will see is advisors come to the forefront who claim that they predicted that this was going to happen and they got their clients out of the market in advance. And these are times where they take advantage of that to try to gain your business and get more. And I caution you against that we've talked about this on the show, that statistically there's always going to be someone, when you have 15,000 advisors out there or more, actually substantially more, somebody will have got
guessed
out of the market right.
They have guessed it right.
It has no bearing on their actual ability to project the next bubble or crisis. So do not fall victim to that. If you have an advisor who's telling you to stay invested, stay diversified, revisit your big picture goals, make allocation changes when those goals and objectives change, not what the daily market is doing, then you need to stay with that advisor and trust them, assuming that they're taking a prudent strategy. Not go fall victim to someone who says, well, geez, I would have got you in gold.
Right.
Right? Or I would have gotten you out of the market completely.
Right.
It's nonsense.
It is nonsense. Well, here's one that you hear from a lot of the doom and gloomers. Are we entering another Great Depression?
Well, no one truly knows. You know, if we did know that, the market would have already adjusted it, Jack. But certainly there are differences in what's going on and what the government's attempting to do than what happened during the Depression.
Well, first of all, in the Great Depression, we had 25% unemployment. We had 9,500 banks that had failed.
That's right.
You know, we didn't have, you know, the whole reason that we have the SEC right now is because of the Great Depression and the abuse that was happening in the stock market.
Right.
And we'll definitely have some strengthening of the regulations as a result of this credit squeeze. But, you know, it's different.
It is different. There's been, the FDIC insurance now is bumped up to $250,000, and government's standing behind that. In the Depression, we had a restrictive fiscal policy or monetary policy as well. And, you know, we're not going to have that during this period of time. You see,
we learned our lesson.
We learned our lesson from that. And as you said, a lot of the abuses and excesses that were going on, and the media likes to make it out as if Wall Street in its entirety is corrupt and there's abuse. It's not true. I mean, we've put in a lot of the result of the Depression. We've got the SEC, who has been a huge regulatory body in helping ensure our markets are fair. Other things like, you know, the institution, the FDIC, the institutions of Fannie and Freddie Mac that, you know, recently were bailed out. These things that were put into place as a result of that crisis, we'll have new things put in place, and we'll be stronger as we emerge from this crisis.
Right. Well, just even think about the flow, the difference in the flow of information between the 1930s and what it is today. I mean, right now, whether it's good news or bad news, there's just absolute instant communication of that worldwide. So that's part of the reasons. If there's bad news out, everybody knows it. And that's why I think it's part of the reasons you have some of these extreme day-to-day movements.
Yeah.
Back then, you know, where did you get your information from? You didn't get it from the internet. You didn't get it from the TV.
Right.
You know, you got a lot of newspapers, I guess, some radio, word of mouth.
Well, and it's worth mentioning that during the at the low point of the Depression there, the S&P 500 or the Dow Jones, actually, it declined about 89%. But we fully recovered from that.
You know what's interesting? That the 10 worst years of the Great Depression, there was actually 4 years in there where the stock market had returns of greater than 31%.
Yeah.
So even though you went through the Great Depression, doesn't mean that, you know, the markets totally they did crash, but they came back even during the Great Depression.
Right. So there's always opportunity.
There's always opportunity. Yeah. Exactly. Ken, here's a comment or a feeling we get from, with my assets down significantly, am I still on track to retire and reach my other financial goals?
And I think when you look at that, you know, if we look at what happened the last 5 years, and a lot of that depends on when you were doing your financial planning with your advisor, what kind of projections that you used. For us, we tend to use conservative return projections. I mean, even on an all equity portfolio, we'll use something in the range of 8 to 10% on the return side. Now, what we experienced from the end of 2002 through the end of 2007 was an average rate of return somewhere around 19% on those global equity portfolios. So it's over double what we would normally project. So even though we have a setback, for clients that have been working with us for a long time and who we put these projections together for, and we, like I said earlier, we built in the fact that there's volatility, rather than just benchmarking their portfolio among some index or what the total loss has been the last year, if you benchmark your portfolio against where you thought you'd be over the last 5-10 years of financial planning, many people find that they're still on track. And that this is a good opportunity to rebalance. And as we look out over the next 10 years, we'll probably have a little bit higher than expected returns than what we did a year ago.
Do you know that from 1995 through current, the S&P has a annual compounded return of 7.1%? That's 3% or almost whatever, 30% less than what the historical average is.
Yeah.
Now's a great time to be investing. You've literally wiped out the excesses of the dot-com bubble.
Now, for some people, though, Jack, I think they may need to, as you mentioned, they were in this stage of retirement. They've been too aggressive in their investments. So what does that mean? Well, it means that they may have to suffer some pain. Maybe they need to adjust their spending. Maybe some people who are getting ready to retire need to work a little longer.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean, however, that you forego investing.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people, you know, they can get burned, the snake bite effect, and want to put their money into a fixed annuity or get it out. And I've heard of people, you know, putting all their money in gold and these types of things. All they're doing is compounding their problems. Because now they have another risk.
That's right. Huge risk of just over concentrating in an asset or, you know, chasing yesterday's news. Which leads us into, you know, we're running out of time here, Ken, but, you know, what I want to talk about what our listeners should expect of a good investor or advisor during this period of time. I mean, is your advisor, are they in constant contact with you, whether it's on the telephone or emails or newsletters? Are they available when you call them and you just need some comforting words and you need to be reassured you're on the right track?
Right.
You know, or do they, when you call panicked and wanting to get out, you know, do they enable that line of thinking? Or do they have the courage of their convictions to stand up and say, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Johnson, no, here's what you need to do and here's why.
Right. Well, I think that's very important because now is the time when people need advice, and if they're left to just read what's in the media, man, I'm quite fearful for the decisions people are making.
Yeah, me too.
So,
You know, also, I think what you need to go back and look at the entire process with your advisors. I mean, really, did they take the time up front to build an allocation to meet your goals with your risk tolerance, your risk capacity in mind?
Right. Well, maybe now's a good time for us to invite listeners to give us a call. We'd love to take you through that process. And if the current crisis is really giving you a kick in the pants to take a look at your investments again, or to evaluate the relationship you currently have, give us a call. Our number is 1-800-923-4307, and this is Empirical Wealth Management. You can visit our website at empiricalwm.com. And to listen to the past radio shows, we have a lot of archived interviews with authors and academics. You can go to successfulinvestingradio.com.
Ken, we've got about 30 seconds here, and we've got.
Sure.
I just want to get this in real fast for our listeners. I want to talk about positive opportunities with this market downturn.
Yeah.
And really, great opportunity now to reverse dollar cost average. You know, convert some of, rebalance, convert some of those bonds or cash, buying stocks very cheap.
Yeah. Some other things, something we do for clients year round and we're taking full advantage is tax loss harvesting. Look at your portfolio, look at for options to harvest losses, capture those, bank them.
Those are like money in the bank.
Yeah. Again, for people who are saving for their kids' education or for their own retirement, now's not the time to be buying gold or putting their money in cash. You should be doing exactly the opposite and increasing, tighten the budget and increase your savings.
Ken, we're out of time, so until next week, have successful investing and go get them.
Thank you. Have a great week.
The advice given on this show is for informational purposes only. It is not intended as investment advice. Please consult a financial advisor before undertaking any investment decisions. While the show's producers have tried to provide accurate and timely information and have relied on sources they believe to be reliable, the show may include inadvertent technical or factual inaccuracies. Jack Monteith and Ken Smith do not warrant the accuracy or completeness of the materials provided and expressly disclaim any warranties or merchantability or fitness for a particular purpose.